Hello, everyone. I'm Suzanne. I'm an alcoholic.
I
think this is always a problem, right? Doesn't get any easier. Thank you for allowing me to do service. I'm grateful to be here. I love being here. I look forward to coming to this meeting every week. It's my fave. Shut up. It's my sister to taunt me. Anyway, bear with me so I get the nerves out. But I guess what I'll just quickly... First, let me apologize for missing last week. I had plans to go away. And it's just kind of like a little tidbit that I'll share with you guys. You know, when I come here every week, I have sat in this room and judged the person who didn't come, like, you missed a week. I thought, like, why can't they show up for 4 weeks? It's like that big of a commitment. And then when Robin asked me, you know, of course, I never say no. Of course, I'll take the commitment. I wouldn't think twice, you know, about it without, you know, checking my calendar to make sure I was available, you know. Us alcoholics are undisciplined people. And anyway, so I had plans to go away to Florida with my family. And so I had one of my sponsees step in, and I'm sure she was fabulous. So I suffered in AA for a lot of years. I thought that the alcoholic life that I was leading was the only normal life. I really believed that, you know, because I tried to get sober. I mean, I came to AA, and I tried to get sober a lot for a lot of years, you know, doing it my way without fully really, you know, going through the steps or taking too many suggestions. I was really in my head thinking that, you know, that I had a way out, that it couldn't be what they were telling me. And it was a long process, you know, of coming to a place of surrender and to a place of suffering enough. Because we are, you know, as alcoholics, like we definitely, we can take a lot. We are strong people. You know, we're usually smarter than average. You know, we're really, you know, we're quick at our jobs. We're, you know, we're really good people. Like, we're efficient people. And we can take a lot. And I took a lot. I suffered a lot. I kept manipulating everything and everyone around me to accommodate my life as an alcoholic and a user of other substances. And it made my life unmanageable. And it wasn't clear to me just how unmanageable it was or really how powerless I was until I really understood what I suffered from. I thought that I was just wired differently, which I am, actually. I thought that I was just going to live that way forever. I thought that what I had and how I lived was just the way that it was going to be. And I wasn't happy. I was never happy. And my husband, I remember him saying to me, like, when I was in my 20s, you know, at the time I probably had a job, but I wasn't employable for long. I had a job, we had a nice apartment, I had a car, you know, we had a good relationship. He was like, what is wrong with you? Like, most people would be happy, you know, most people would be happy. But I wasn't happy. I had no joy. I had an emptiness and a void, I used to call it, because I didn't ever hear anybody. When I come to AA now, I hear people talk about it all the time. It's like part of alcoholism. It's a spiritual malady. But I felt an emptiness in my chest, in my inside, and nothing I could grab for was sufficient enough to fill it. You know, like, alcohol and drugs worked. They were a solution for my problem until they didn't work anymore either. But it was the only solution I knew. So whenever I put down the drink and I had periods of abstinence in my life, I was usually worse off. Almost always worse off. I might be okay for a little while, but then, you know, the obsession would creep back in, and I had no treatment for what I suffered for. I had no solution. I had no coping skills whatsoever. I had no God or no spirituality or anything. And I usually went pretty freaking insane pretty quickly. I didn't have very many long periods of sobriety. I had short periods of sobriety throughout, or dry time, I should say, because I wasn't really sober. But I did keep coming to AA. You know, I really did. I went on a regular basis. I didn't look for solution-based meetings. I didn't know what the solution was. I went to meetings where people complained and, you know, people were talking about, you know, all their ailments, and, you know, we all got together and complained at the diner afterward. Like, it was really not, I had a hard time finding solution. I also wasn't really listening with the right ears, but because there may have been people in those meetings that have solution, I just didn't hear it. I wasn't ready. It was my journey. And so my journey is that I suffered in AA for a long time. And Paul had mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about, he had shared, you know, like I was like, you really need to do this. You need to do it right. You know, and he said, you know, I think, he thinks, and his experience is that do it. Forget about doing it right. And I do agree with that. I do agree with that. I think that you can't really mess it up if you follow the book and the instructions. You do the best that you can do, and if you do that, it's sufficient enough to move forward. And you can have another experience. I think that what my problem was that I really wasn't following the book. I really wasn't following anybody's direction. I took half measure. I wasn't completely honest with one person. All the things that are, you know, all up in here, I didn't do all of it. So I suffered and suffered and suffered. So I don't know if I shared this about like the real crux of like when I came in, like on my knees, the first time that I spoke here. But after I had my second child, I was very sick at this point. I got diagnosed with cancer, and I had no idea, like I had no skills to deal with this situation. And today I'm actually very grateful that it happened. You know, it got me to a place where, like, I suffered so much and I just dove into my addiction because it was the only solution I knew to deal with anything, to deal with regular life. And now I have a diagnosis of breast cancer and, you know, this could potentially kill me. I have a baby, my daughter was 8 weeks old, and I had a toddler. So it was a very, very difficult time, you know, and I completely threw myself into drugs and alcohol and in my ways of coping. And it's so funny, like, we talk about insanity. I wouldn't come to your house if you had the flu, you know, but, you know, I was pumping myself full of chemicals every day to deal with what I was going through. Anyway, I'm grateful for that today because it really brought me to my knees. You know, I got bad enough in such a short time that I was willing to go and you know, take care of myself. And I did a lot of things. I went to, I went to treatment. I went to outpatient. I went to detox. I went to rehab. I went to this long halfway house. None of it was the solution. None of it. In fact, I used while I was away. But what I was lucky enough to find somebody who knew this book and who had a sparkle in her eye that I had never seen before. Maybe I just wasn't looking. So I grabbed onto her and she took me through these steps. And she took me through the big book. She told me about what I suffered from. She told me about the physical allergy, an abnormal reaction to alcohol that triggers a phenomenon of craving. You know, that obsession, that thought that crowds out all others, because that's what would happen to me. You know, like I would have nothing in my system. And, like, all of a sudden, I get the thought, you know? And, I mean, you know, if you're in here, you know where that goes. Like, you can't, without a solution, there's no fending that off. It's coming. You know, it's just a matter of time. And they can rearrange everything in my life and everyone in my life to make sense of picking up. And I was powerless, and my life was unmanageable. I didn't realize it, like I said at the time, until I really looked at it. You know, I really put it on paper. It was unmanageable before I even picked up a drink. I was unmanageable because of the way that I thought. And you can't fix the problem with the problem. And I was always trying to fix my own problem. I was telling therapists what to do, you know, when I was going, seeking help from a psychologist to help me, and I was telling them, oh, that's this or that. It's ridiculous, manipulating what they were telling me to do. I came to believe, you know, that took a little while down here, you know, but I was willing to believe. I started a routine or a habit of prayer, and I started to do that on a regular basis. I realized that I was insane, doing that same thing over and over again, expecting it to go differently, you know, like really truly believing, like, just one more, just this is going to be it, then tomorrow I'm back in AA, I'm going to, and it never was, every time I believed it. So I was clearly insane. Did I think that he was going to restore me to sanity? I wasn't quite sure, honestly. And in the big book, they talk about we agnostics, and you know that they talk about all the reasons that we should believe, we should grab onto something, because there is like proof kind of that it works, scientific kind of, if you have that science mind like I had, you know, I think I might have been better off than someone who had believed in a God that, you know, didn't work for them, because I didn't have that. So I know some people struggle with that. I was willing. I was willing because I needed it. I was desperate. As desperate as a drowning man, they say in the book. okay, I made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understood him, I didn't understand what my will was. I didn't understand what, you know, how to turn it over. I didn't know what was blocking me, and it was all my ego. It was the way that I was running the show, you know, thinking that I knew what everybody else was thinking, taking everything so personally, you know, like expectations of how everything was going to go. I couldn't go through my day without having an expectation of how things were going to be, you know, let alone what everybody else, like I had this perfectionism, I projected that onto everybody. And if you fell short of that, no bueno. Made a fit, you know, an inventory. I did. I looked at my resentments, which are the number one offender. I can't afford to be angry because it'll make me drink and then it'll make me die. I learned that, and so I can't really afford it. So I have to cease fighting. I took a look at my fears, and like all of a sudden, like around this place, like when I was doing my inventory, like things started happening. Like I listed my fears thoroughly, looked at my fears, I asked myself why I had them with my sponsor, and all of a sudden, like, you know, they started to go away. Like, just out of, it was really miraculous. I took a look at my sex misconduct, and basically I realized that I used every single person, and I don't necessarily mean in sex, but in my sex, like, you know, like, just in my being, my sexuality, to get what I wanted, and I stepped over people. And I'm sorry if I'm speaking so fast. I'm nervous. I looked at all harms I had done others. You know, like any, like I stole from people. I was blocked up with all the stuff I did to other people. And all that stuff I did to other people was because of my will. You know, because I made decisions based on self that placed me in a position to be hurt. Then people hurt me, and then I was angry and mad and fearful and... You know, I didn't want to lose anything. I was afraid I wasn't going to get what I wanted. I was afraid you wouldn't take what I had. I admitted all of this stuff to another person. Every single thing. I told her everything. I sat for the hour, just like I said in the book. And she said to me, at this point, you're at a crossroads here. If you're holding on to anything, you got to dump it. And I had never done this. I had never told one person all my life story. I did it. I really believe at this point I was entirely ready. Like that moment when I let go of that last piece, I was really readying myself to have God remove my defects of character. And then I learned in this program that those character defects sometimes are going to stick around for a little while, and we don't know why. You know, we're going to do what we can to right them. Like we're going to try, you know, be honest. You know, try to be honest. Or, you know, I think I heard this from Paul. I always give full credit. Like, if you owe $1 million and you pay that back $1, you're the person that's paying their debt. You know, like, so you have to put in the effort. And then God's going to take care of the big stuff you can't. You know, so we're going to ready ourselves. God's going to remove our defects of character. I made a list of all persons that I had harmed. I think I did it thoroughly. I'm pretty sure that I did. My sponsor didn't mess with it too much. It was my inventory. And then I made direct amends, and I made face-to-face amends with people. And I asked people, I believe I've harmed you in this way. Please tell me if I've harmed you in a way that I am unaware of. And then I had to shut up and listen. Oh, and one more thing. Around here, my sponsor said, just go out and be useful. Because I was like, what are my defects? You know, like, what are my defects? They're all fear and ego. That's all it is. I don't need 75 defects of character. Just go out and be useful. Do for others. Do something for someone else without telling anybody. And that's what I did. It worked. It really did. And then when I was making my amends, what can I do to make this right? What can I do? Please give me something. Tell me to... My sister made a joke. She's like, you'll start by giving me all the clothes in your closet. You know, like, a lot of people said, just keep doing what you're doing. Some situations didn't go so good. You know, some were really, really negative, like bad, horrible even, like sad. And there are people that I don't have in my life today because of what I did in my past. And I had to, at this point, make decisions about who I was spending my time with. You know, because I could no longer spend time if I can be of use and be helpful to somebody. But I also have to keep in mind my sobriety and my family, which comes first. So I did, you know, like, because one of my old friends was like, oh, just, can't we just go back to the way that it was? No, I can't. That I can't make that right that way. Because it would put my sobriety in jeopardy. And I hope I didn't talk too much, because now we're at 10, which is what we're here to talk about tonight, 10, 11, and 12. I went one time to a meeting in Staten Island, and this amazingly dynamic man got up and spoke about step 10 in a whole new light. And then after that, I read the pages a little bit differently, and I continue to, and it's exciting for me. You, as a group, you know, understand 10, but a lot of people don't understand step 10. And so what I learned about step 10 was that we have to continue on in our day. You know, it's like, you know, it's not a nightly inventory. We wake up in the morning, that's all like talked about in 11, but when we, you know, when we're going through our day, it tells us what we're supposed to do because these things are going to crop up. You know, we're selfish, self-centered alcoholics, and fear crops up, resentment, anger, you know, selfishness, self-pity, those things crop up. You know, like the knee-jerk reaction to lie. It happens to me today still in my head. Thank God for text messaging. You can erase that. You know, like, oh, given some lame excuse for something, like, why am I even doing that? So continue to watch. Karina always says, continue to watch the thinker in your mind. And so, like, when I have these thoughts, I'm like, I'll have a selfish thought, and then I ask God. Like, that tells us what to do in the book. It's like a page and a half. It's brilliant. You know, like, when these things crop up, we ask God immediately to, we ask God to remove them. Then we, I forget what's come, it's maybe out of order, but we call somebody up immediately. We try to talk about it. We turn our thoughts onto how we can be useful to somebody else. So like maybe I'm at work and I'm about to do something, like I'm fearful and I'm selfish or I'm angry at my husband or whatever. I can't run out and go pick up a sponsee, but I can turn my thoughts to like, you know what, tonight when I get to Primary Purpose, I'm going to make sure I like talk to somebody that's new. Or, you know, turning my thoughts on how I can be useful to somebody else. I ask God to remove it. I call somebody if I need to. I make an amends if I need to, like a prompt one. And I turn my thoughts on how I can be useful to somebody else. And that person that I could be useful could be sitting right next to me, not an alcoholic. Right. It doesn't have to be an alcoholic. And so that's what we do through our day. We're careful to watch. And then what happens to us in the beginning, you get little 10-step promises in there that we all of a sudden get like, you know, a little bit of a, you know, inspiration. What it says that at this point we should be walking in conscious contact, you know, like we enter the world of the spirit, you know, like what does that mean? You know, like that's pretty cool. I had no idea what that meant. Today I do. And like you're awake, you're like more awake, you know, you can be present for things. You can sit for that moment of silence and it doesn't make you uncomfortable. I hate when it ends. I really, when they say welcome back, I'm like, oh, I wish I could stay there, you know, because I'm comfortable in my skin. I'm at perfect peace and ease. I can look the world in the eye. Like those promises of all, at this point, they're all self-pity, self-seeking will slip away. All these things happen. They really work. These steps really work if they're done right. Or if they're done properly or effort is there. And it also says in 10, I lost my train of thought. Doesn't matter. Whatever. So let's move on to 11. 11 sought through prayer and meditation to improve. So at this point, you should have it. Oh, I know what I was going to say. By 10, you should not, the problem is removed. You should recoil from the thought of addiction like you would a hot flame. And that is exactly my experience. I had never once in 12 or so years of coming to AA ever not have to fight to stay away from drugs and alcohol. I fought to stay away from it, and it, when I did these steps, by the time I got to 10, that is my experience. I the thought of it made me recoil like from a hot flame, because what I got from doing this was so much better than anything I could get from the drink or the drug beforehand. So it's absolutely my experience. It's my experience, the experience of the people that I work with, and anybody that does the steps. It is there, you know, that it's a promise. So with the prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact, which means you already have it, now you want to improve upon it, as we understood in praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. So in the book, it says, when we wake, I'm going to keep it simple, when we wake, we ask for God's will to be done. You know, keep it simple. In throughout the day, in the middle of the day, you know, you pause when agitated. you can take a step back, you're placed in a position of neutrality, which is like huge, because I don't know about you, but I'm like a reactor. Things happen and I want to react immediately to it. But I don't have that experience today in my life. Like, you know, just on the way over here, I told my husband, you're home tonight, please be home at 6:15. I really need to be on time because I'm speaking, blah, blah, blah. You know, he wasn't home. It was 6:37. I'm getting in my car like mad, you know. But I didn't react, and I'm not even going to. You know, I can't control what anybody else is going to do. I can ask for what I need, and if you know, to the point where it's, if something's not acceptable to me, I need to do something about it. I'm not going to get mad, because I can't afford to. Because for me, to drink is to get angry is to drink. To drink is to die. I learned that in my program. I mean, I still get mad. Don't get me wrong. I'm not perfect, but I try not to. I really do. I'm placed in a position of neutrality. Most things really roll off my back today. I don't get all worked up over things. And it says that. We're sane at this point. Sanity is restored for us. And, you know, there are a lot of things out there to enrich spirituality. You know, it suggests that we go out and read other things. You know, like I have. I've, like, gotten all into Buddhism, and I read, you know, Sermon on the Mount, and just, like, trying to just find more, you know, like I'm big into the spirit of the, you know, the universe, because there's something tangible in this. There really is. It's like my experience is that I've done this, and like I've had this spiritual awakening, and like I can feel it. It's tangible. And, you know, I may not understand it, and I don't really need to, nor do I care to. I just know that it works, and I've applied it to my life, and the results have been absolutely phenomenal for me. So like I'm really into the meditation thing, and I find that when I quiet my mind, I'm really able to be present, and I'm really able to be available for people, and the stuff that normally would bog me up, it's not as important. There's time for that stuff. I mean, it's life. Like, there's busy, you know, I'm certainly busy. So I have time for that stuff. I make time for it. And when I meditate, my mind is clear enough that I can handle that stuff. You know, like I can do my job. I can, you know, take a phone call from a sponsee during the day. I can, you know, I can handle my life. And my life is busy. It says in our book that we wasted so much energy trying to arrange everything to suit us. And, you know, now at this point, at step 11, we don't tire as easy. I wake up at 7 o'clock every morning, if not earlier, and I don't go to bed till 11:30 at night. And I'm productive in that time, you know, and I find time to be quiet also, which is, it's important. For me, it's very important. And it's given me a lot of gifts. It's given me the ability to receive life on a level that I didn't understand before. You know, like I can really experience joy. You know, I can spend time with my children and like the, you know, who are character defects, you know, they're like Miracle Grow for my character defects. I love to say that because it's so true. They really get me under my skin. But I'm able to deal with them and that and life and still enjoy these little moments that I was missing, you know, and just even with a friend, like I can listen to a friend, I can really listen and not be in my mind thinking about something else when someone's trying to talk to me, which is what I always did. And available. And people see it. They see it. The profound alteration to life that I have gone through is people are aware of it around me. They can feel it, you know, and they can see it in me, especially those that know me. So as we get to the end of the night, you know, like we pause when out of shade during the day, we ask for help throughout the day, God, you know, will be done. We practice our step 10 throughout the day. And then at the end of the day, I review, you know, where was I selfish? Was I dishonest? You know, was I self-seeking? Was I afraid? What could I have done differently? Where could I be more of use? You know, all those things that it asks us, those questions. I just answer them, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, you know. And then if I owe an apology, I need to do something about it. Do I have to share something with somebody, like, you know, ASAP? Or can I go to sleep tonight, you know, peacefully? It's not that difficult, you know, but I fall short all the time, you know, like as I pass out and I'm exhausted and it's, you know, but then I'll think about it the next day and, you know, so, you know, it's the kind of thing, it's like once you've gone through this the way, you know, like thoroughly, it does take a little while to unravel from here. Like once you have this, you can revert back. And I used to say to my sponsor, how can anybody ever go back to the old way of thinking? It can happen, because it's or happened to me. Like, it's subtle, you know? It says alcohol is a subtle foe. And it does, and it creeps back in. So you really do. I mean, if you slack off, you got to jump back into it as soon as you realize that you're slacking off. And then step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So I'll try to speak quickly because I don't want to take up too much time. But I tell my I tell people who are looking for a sponsor or who are looking to sponsor, have you had a spiritual experience? Have you had a spiritual experience? Are you, you know, because if you haven't, you really shouldn't be sponsoring. Because if you haven't unblocked the nonsense that is alcoholism, then God can't work through you. Because I can't help you as an alcoholic. I can only give you my experience. And if I am not clear of that garbage that is alcoholism, then I cannot be a vessel for God to work through me to help you. And I tell that to people because a lot of people sponsor that have not had a spiritual experience. I'm not Gestapo by any means. Like, it takes a lot for me to fire you as a sponsee, you know, but I try to work with people. And I absolutely believe I had a spiritual experience. Like I said, I can absolutely feel it in my life. It's obvious in my life. For one, I have this like ridiculously awesome job that I wasn't even employable. And all I did when I went back to work, I diligently looked for a job when I was ready to go back to work. And when I got a job, all I did was show up there and carry these principles in all of my affairs. Like, I was the one smiling in the morning. I was the one going out of my way just because I wanted to. And the next thing I know, they're like begging me to take a promotion. And I have this like really amazing job. And my children are happy and healthy. And anything that comes up with them, you know, we deal with, we follow through as parents. My husband totally got on board with this whole thing, and he's able to, you know, he's respecting me as a human being, because he didn't before, and as a partner, which is huge, because he didn't that either, you know. But, you know, today I am respectable and dignified, and I show up for work, I do the best that I can do, so I carry these principles in all of my affairs. I fall short all the time. I certainly do. I'm not perfect. And you know what? Thank God I did a good step 3, because if I didn't, I might beat myself back into alcoholism, because I understand that I'm not human. I understand that some of those defects of character are going to stick around because they're going to have some good use one day. I understand that my will, feeling like I'm not good enough, is just part of my will blocking me. That I'm gentle with myself when I fall short. You know, like I say, all right, what can I do better? That's not useful. It's counterproductive to be bashing when we fall short. Like, I should be in a different place. I should be doing more. What does that even mean? Should, says who? If I'm here right now, this is exactly where God wants me to be. And then I get to work with women and show them this amazing experience. And I love sponsoring. I take on as many as I can. And every time I add a new sponsee, I would say, well, I don't know if I can work with 8 because I never worked with 8 before. Or I don't know if I can work with, and that's what my sponsor said to me. Because when I had 2 and a third asked me, I was like, oh my God, can I do it? You know, can I take a third sponsee? My sponsor said, I don't know, can you? Have you ever done it before? What's your experience? So this beautiful life that I have is a balance. It's like certainly a finesse of balance. And I do what I can, and I've had to pull back from sponsorship at times when I had a lot going on. And there's like, you know, kind of ebbs and flows with that. But to watch somebody change, you know, like to watch that light go off, it is so powerful. And when I went through the steps with each of my sponsees, it was like I was reliving them, and it keeps it real fresh in my mind. And I, you know, like I love it. I love it. And it's not the only type of service. It's not the only type of way to carry this message, but a lot of, you know, like I've had the experience, and I'm coming up on 4 years, and I've only had the experience where, like, where I go, people want me to sponsor them. That's been my experience. I must have that light that my sponsor had in her eyes, and I'm happy to do it. I never feel inconvenienced. Like, really, once in a blue moon, I might be like, oh, I don't want to answer this phone call, but I really don't have that experience. People say to me, how is it possible that you do all this? And honestly, it's not. It's not possible for me to do it. Like it says, I'm undisciplined. Alcoholics are undisciplined. But God makes it possible. And it's because I do this stuff that it's possible. You know, and you know, it talks about like a psychic change sufficient to overcome alcoholism in the book. And like, my thinking is completely different than it used to be. my attitudes, upon life. You know, like I really do try to bring joy everywhere I go. And somewhere in 10, 11, it says like, it seems like it takes no effort at all. And that's my experience. It doesn't take much effort. You know, it was hard when I was going through it. I remember like writing on the side of my book, like nobody ever talks about how hard this is. You know, I was going to a real solution-based meeting. Everybody was like, yes, it's so awesome, so awesome. Like people really weren't talking about how hard it was to go through the steps, and it really was. You know, like taking a real hard look at who I was and who I thought I was and who I actually was. It was like a big eye-opener for me. And it was difficult, but I would do it times 1,000. I would go through it all over again. I'd go through it every month if I had to keep what I have. Like, it's that good over here on this side. And, I can't say enough. Like I said in the beginning, I'm a satisfied customer of AA. It did take me a little longer than some. It doesn't have to be that way with you. You could really go through these steps, like, within 2 to 3 months, honestly, if you're willing to meet once a week with your sponsor, and if your sponsor's not willing to find another one. There's no reason to keep suffering if you're coming to AA and you're not getting what you need. There is a solution for what we suffer from, and it's very, very outlined and clear. It's in the big book, exactly what to do. It explains everything. You need somebody to kind of decipher, and that book is like a living thing. It changes. You know, my experience is evolving. And I just, every time I read it, I have a new experience with it. So anyway, I said enough, I'm sure. And I'd like to hear from you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.